This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Good morning, Winnipeg. Good morning, Manitoba. And for all those joining us live this morning at TSN1290.ca, good morning, universe, and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. 3 hours of hockey talk for you on this Saturday morning. Joining us on the show today, Brendan Ross from McKean's Hockey and the Scout.ca. He's going to join us to talk about the Ontario Hockey League draft eligible prospects. In 1 hour's time, Kelly McCrimmon, governor, general manager, head coach of the Brandon Wheat Kings, is going to join us to talk about the Western Hockey League's draft eligible prospects. And then in the final hour today, columnist with the Edmonton Journal, John McKinnon, is going to join us to talk about the moves the Oilers made yesterday, hiring Bob Nicholson as vice chairman and the Oilers offseason in general. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. Facebook.com/Illegal Curve is our Facebook page and our website with the latest NHL and Winnipeg Jets news is IllegalCurve.com. I'm your host, Drew Mandel, joined in studio by my colleagues, Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg. And last night, at the 14:43 mark of the second overtime, the Los Angeles Kings became Stanley Cup champions.
Cleared away by the Kings, picked up by Martinez. Martinez to Clifford, feeds it right side to Foley with a shot. Save, rebound, score!
Last night, Game 5, obviously, the Kings defeating the New York Rangers by a 3-2 margin, winning the series 4-1. Mm-hmm. Your thoughts on the game last night? You know, I think I tweeted out last night, I thought this was the best 5-game series you're going to see. You know, as close as it's been, the back and forth, the leads, the lead changes and everything else.
I think probably if you're comparing it, Drew, you'd probably compare it, going back quite a ways, would be 93, the Habs. That was a 5-game series. You had Habs winning game one. You had the Illegal Curve in game two, the Desjardins goals. You had 3 overtimes in that one as well. You had Gretzky. So that kind of seems like, you know, Montreal, LA, very similar the way it broke down. The team that just came all the way, kept winning in overtime, continued to do that. And great overtime. Mm-hmm. I mean, just a terrific game last night. You couldn't help but be into it. And I love the pace and the intensity of the overtime, Ezzy, and the execution for the most part. I mean, you're looking at two tremendous goaltenders, and, you know, the Rangers weren't shot for shot with the Kings, but they were able to use their speed and quick strike offense to keep themselves in it. And of course, Lundqvist was huge for them. But the Kings are a pretty dominant team. As they come in 4 waves all the time, right? Just play line after line after line after line. The defense, goaltending, and so defense forwards, and then you have Daryl Sutter there, who is a mastermind. I said last week's show, I think he's the second best coach in the league to Mike Babcock. So you have all hands on deck. Healthy team, look great.
Yeah, you're right, Richie. And you mentioned the pace, and this is under conditions where you have the players that, so you're talking about Drew Doughty, the players that have played in the Olympics, Drew Doughty, yeah, Jonathan Quick, Andrzej Kopitar, Jeff Carter, and on the Rangers side, Dustin, you have Brown, Ryan McDonagh, Dustin Brown, you have Henrik Lundqvist, players that have also played in the Olympics this year. You're talking about players, yeah, that have played in 120 plus games this, mm-hmm, year. Yeah. So you're talking about the pace of overtime. And I know that all of the players heading into this game and heading into the series didn't want to talk about how much hockey they've played, but they have played a lot of hockey, guys. The Cup was awarded on June 13th. That's late. Mm-hmm. We've seen the Cup awarded in early June. And we're talking about, you know, the last decade or so, but these guys have played a lot of hockey, and I know, and you could tell at certain points, these guys were tired, and the amount of overtime games in these five games, I think, is what made the Stanley Cup final really good. I think all of us in this room, I think Richie and I both said Kings in six. I was expecting maybe the Rangers to win one more game, and they easily could have won one more game. They were a Ryan McDonough post away from forcing a game six, so the series was a lot closer than some people thought it was going to be, the way the Kings disposed of the Hawks and the way the Rangers kind of had to stumble through to the Stanley Cup finals. But I think we've seen that the Kings are a team that gets it done when it matters.
That's right.
They're well coached. You mentioned Daryl Sutter. For a team to come back 3-0, Richie, and win three game sevens on the road, that means this is a team that's deep and they're prepared, and they don't ever seem to be flustered. And there are, how many times did we see the LA Kings down a lot of goals after those first three games in the first round against the Sharks? You just didn't see it. They were in every game. They control the pace of most games. We saw the Kings here in Winnipeg earlier this season.
Absolutely.
They weren't a sixth seed. They were really a top seed in the Western Conference. Sure, you happen to be in a division with Anaheim and San Jose, so it's tough to get the division title. But it was an excellent series. It was really, you know, back to what you said, Drew, the fact that there were three overtime games out of five games, it was a short series, but it was one of the best short series we've ever seen. And what about Justin Williams? Like, when's the Conn Smythe? I love that. I thought they were going to give it. We were talking about this before the game. Thought maybe they'd give it to Anze Kopitar, maybe Drew Doughty. Justin Williams deserves it. This guy is Mr. Clutch, and he's a third-line grinder, his third cup. I thought that was just excellent. That was a really fitting touch to this team, because, sure, they have you know, kind of players that are in their primes right now, but also it was the veterans that got the job done, and he was leading that charge, and he got I think the goal in the first period really solidified him getting the Conn Smythe, and I thought it was great for him. I know Richie's always been a huge fan of Justin Williams, and this guy is just clutch. He's always there. He's a great leader in the dressing room, and I thought that was great that he got the Conn Smythe.
There was no real wrong answer, I think, for the Conn Smythe. Yeah. They could have picked from any of a half a dozen guys, probably, and nobody would have been that upset with it.
You know, everybody likes to look at certain things and certain stats, but one thing that stood out to me was the post game, and I thought it was great. It's an authentic environment, whereas most...
Oh, I thought you meant every time that the Rangers hit the post in overtime.
Yeah, yeah, no, true. But you look at you know, on the ice, and what the Kings players said to a man about the victory. That is a group of guys who enjoys playing with each other, who has a tremendous chemistry, who have a tremendous chemistry, and you can't quantify that. You can't. You listen to the answers of those players. There's nobody there looking for number one, looking out for number one. There wasn't. You listen to all those guys. Daryl Sutter has them on the same page. Mike Richards plays fourth line center. Mike Richards can play up if you need him to. You have guys like Matt Green, Robin Regier, Alec Martinez, just talking about how fortunate he was. You have guys like Dustin Brown, who moved from the first line down, you know, second line, get benched basically in the Olympics. But at the end of the day, nobody lets those distractions get in the way of the common goal. And that's the reason they're there yesterday.
Sure.
I mean, sure, talent's a factor, but don't tell me that they're talented. I love their talent, but don't tell me they're any more talented than San Jose. Don't tell me they're any more talented than Chicago or even Boston. You can go over some other team, just straight talent for talent. And LA Kings are probably a top five talent team, maybe top 10. You can get some arguments. But the point is, these guys are all on the same page. And that's one of the main reasons that they're there. Just because everybody's able to play with one another and know the rule. If you look at the final goal in last night's game, it's a classic reason why. The puck goes up to Toffoli on the right side. Toffoli takes a shot for a rebound. That's a shot for a rebound. Left side pad. Mm-hmm. Shot across his body to the middle of the ice, to the pad. There's a rebound.
Yeah. Low and hard.
What does Kyle Clifford do on that play? He makes a pass to Toffoli, and he drives the net.
Right. Taking two Rangers defenders with him.
Well, Zuccarello made a bad read and screwed up there. But the point is, Clifford goes to the net. What does Martinez do? Martinez joins the rush. Why can he join the rush? Because the King behind him is covering him. Martinez gets the rebound, which was intended, puts the puck in the net. Just, that is not flashy. And none of the goals last night that the King scored were flashy. But even the first goal, too. Williams makes the pass to the point, follows the puck to the net, goes to the net. Two guys in front of him in the net. Puts the puck through. Gabrick, rebound in front of the net. The simple play isn't always the flashy play. but it works, and you have to sell that to your team, and that's why they're so good.
I think it was so important for the Kings' success and even the Rangers' success in these playoffs that they had four lines of forwards and six defensemen who were able to contribute throughout the entirety of the game.
Good point.
And I think that's sort of been overlooked a little bit, you know, is how that they were, it didn't matter the situation. You know, sometimes, you know, you hear shortening the bench and things of that nature, and we know all about the, you know, the, it's here in Winnipeg, how the depth lines have always been a problem for the Jets. The Kings and the Rangers were able to throw all, you know, 18 players, 18 skaters on the ice at any given opportunity. John Moore and Kevin Klein, big minutes in overtime. Girardi and Stallman, McDonough and Stall.
Girardi, Stall.
Or yeah, you know, Stallman, you know, I'm just going through all the defensemen there. It didn't matter who they had, who, you know, it was next man up. It wasn't, okay, we can't really trust you in this situation. And it goes to your point about you can move Richards from the fourth line up and everywhere around.
If you make everybody feel like part of the team, then they're willing, Ezzy, to do whatever you tell them they have to do.
Yeah, I agree with that. And you look at the Rangers' fourth line, and Alain Vigneault was actually playing his fourth line more than Daryl Sutter was playing his fourth line, with Moore, Dorsett, and then Dorsett got injured. Moore, Dorsett, and Boyle. But you're right, Drew. This Kings' depth was underrated this year. And there was a lot of focus on Mike Richards playing on the fourth line, but that's just because of the depth they have at center. But you still saw Mike Richards playing first-line penalty kill. You saw Mike Richards playing on the point on the power play.
Saved a goal on the penalty kill on that
save. A goal on the penalty kill. Mike Richards, don't forget that he was a huge part of this Stanley Cup win. Sure, he struggled a lot this regular season and early in the playoffs. We were talking about him in the first round when they were done. Is Mike Richards part of the long-term future of the Kings because of his contract? And then the Kings come back and then they beat Anaheim and he became more and more of a factor in the series.
Game seven there too.
But this team, Richie, defense was never the problem with this team. Throughout the year, they were having trouble scoring goals, and they go out and get Marian Gaborik, and he ends up scoring 13 goals. It was just, they always had an answer to everything. Whenever someone was struggling, Andrei Kopitar didn't score a goal in the five games of the finals. I think he had two assists in five games, but he didn't need to. They were getting goals from other guys. They got a lot of goals from defensemen. And this team really showed that they were just as deep, as Richie mentioned, as the Ducks, as the Sharks, as the Hawks. And that's really what factors in. And it's incredible to say that, you know, they have now the chance of being the dynasty, not the Chicago Blackhawks, even though, you know, they're both at two cups. But it's incredible.
That's it. Like, next year, you think that's the battle. Those guys meet again in the conference final. You're battling to be the dynasty, one of the two.
I'll tell you what, let's go to break. When we come back, I want to recap the playoffs in general, talk about it overall, and I want to answer the question, which team is better suited for a longer run, the Los Angeles Kings or the Chicago Blackhawks? You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.
Minutes past 9 in the morning here on TSN 1290, TSN1290.ca. Wanted to remind you something that's going to take place today at the Clara Hughes Recreational Park. It's Clara's big ride. As we all know, she's riding her bike across the country in support of mental health awareness. She's heading into Winnipeg sometime between, she's expected to be at the Clara Hughes Recreational Park between 2 and 3:30 this afternoon, but there's a whole carnival taking place there starting at 11 a.m. Entertainment, yoga, cycling, activity booths, etc. All sorts of great things, all in support of mental health and mental health awareness. So check it out if you're looking for something to do. Clara's Big Ride at the Clara Hughes Recreational Park, 281 Henderson Highway. Expect her there between 2 and 3:30 this afternoon. And of course, Manitoba's Big Social in support of Clara's Big Ride, 8 p.m. tonight at the Manitoba Museum. DJs, our good friend Big Daddy Taz, and more. So check it out if you're looking for something to do tonight.
Cheers to Clara Hughes, one of the best ever female athletes, in my opinion.
Yeah, just athletes, period, I would say.
Athletes, period, both a medalist in the Summer and Winter Olympics, and now doing great stuff for mental health.
Yeah.
She's just a great person in general.
Absolutely.
Great person, proud to be a Winnipegger.
Yeah.
associating your name with Claire Hughes, so good for her.
And now this leads me to tell the quick story about how Laura and I, my wife, were out at a local fast food restaurant, and a gentleman comes up and taps her on the shoulder and says, "Are you Claire Hughes?"
I've been saying that for a while.
Yeah, you've been saying that they look similar, and I hadn't seen it, and then we're sitting there, and this guy, "Excuse me, miss, are you Clara Hughes?"
Not quite. What did she say?
She said no. Oh. Well, she's not Clara Hughes, but it was, I enjoyed that. I had a good chuckle at that anyways. Nobody's ever mistaken me for an Olympian. Maybe an Olympian eater, but that's about it. Anyways, getting back to the Stanley Cup playoffs, Stanley Cup final last night. Before the break, I asked you, you know, which team, the Blackhawks or the Kings, are best situated and best set up to maintain this success they've had, obviously being the two dominant teams in the Western Conference. You know, I'll flip it over. You know, open it up. Which one, Chicago or Los Angeles? Which do you prefer?
It's a really good question because I think both teams are well set up here. You look at Patrick Kane and Jonathan Toews. Richie, their contracts are expiring, and Stan Bowman has said that he wants to get Patrick Kane and Jonathan Toews under contract long term
after next year.
After next year, we should mention. Yep, after the 2014-2015 season, those players will be free agents, and I think that you look at every position for these teams. Jonathan Quick is under contract, and they have the edge there. But as far as the overall edge, I think they're very even. And we saw that with the Kings beating the Hawks, even though a lot of people, myself included, thought the Hawks were going to win and go back to the Stanley Cup and win it. But they're not at all at the point where the window is closing at all. And you look at whether it's Anje Kopitar and the young guns that have come in here, Tanner Pearson, a late first-round pick in 2012, Tyler Toffoli, young players. Sure, they have some players that maybe are nearing the end of their career, but even a guy like Justin Williams, Jeff Carter, these guys are in their early 30s. Mike Richards, if he sticks around. Marian Gaborik, you got to think that the way that they've played and won the Stanley Cup at 33, 34 years old, however old Gaborik is, he's still going to be around for 3 or 4 years. So I don't think you have, by any means, two teams. Certainly, Richie, not. This isn't a situation like 2009 where the Chicago Blackhawks have to get rid of a bunch of players because they have salary cap problems. A lot of these players will be around next year. And sure, you might have the odd depth player that doesn't make it back next year, you know, whether it's, you know, a Chris Versteeg on Chicago or maybe, you know, a player like Colin Fraser, somebody who wasn't playing that much for the Kings. You might have some of those players replaced. But for the most part, next year when the puck is dropped, you might see 90% of these players back next year. And that might not be that different a couple years from now. So I don't know how to answer that. I think that both of these teams are going to be competing for the Western Conference Championship, Western Conference Finals for a long time.
There's other good teams too. You know, Drew, it's a good question because you look at it matchup wise, and you have Kopitar and Toews, both young centers or in their prime, really, who are going to be going forward. You have Kane, and then the question is, who would you have on LA? Young, you know, youngster who can be at that level of Kane. I don't know if there is that guy, but up the middle, the Kings are far better. I think the Kings are probably better suited to win in the next 2 years, and the Hawks probably better suited to win down the road too. But that's only because I think a couple of these Kings players they're not old, quote unquote, but they're probably going to slow down in the next little bit here. And I think, you know, Brandon Saad is a little bit better than maybe some of the... I like Tanner Pearson and Toffoli a lot. I think Brandon Saad's a really good player. So, I you know, you could go either way on this. You really could. Lombardi's done a heck of a job in L.A. I think L.A. is probably... Not only because they won, I think depth-wise, center, all those positions, I think they're better suited to probably win next year and be that dynasty. I think over the next 5 years, I think the Hawks would be the team that I'd probably lean on more for more cups if you have to pick. But you also have the Quick Crawford issue, too, and not that Quick was great in these playoffs by any means. I think Crawford,
when he needed to be, that was about
it. Yeah, that's right. And Crawford, who I think has really improved, you know, had some struggles in these playoffs as well. So... It's a luxury. It's a luxury for hockey fans to be able to debate that, and hopefully they play again in the playoffs.
Richie, the key is that
hopefully they play 82 times next year.
The core groups of these teams are not changing in the foreseeable future. And if you look at the Kings, for me, there's some concerns. Willie Mitchell, Matt Green, Robin Regier, these guys are getting a little bit older, so you're going to have to address that either through trades or maybe drafting someone who can replace these guys in a couple of years. But Robin Regier, who finally got healthy, they couldn't get him back in the lineup because Willie Mitchell and Matt Green, the two players, or maybe Alec Martinez, but they couldn't bring someone out because they were playing so well defensively. And Jake Muzzin, you guys know how much I like Jake Muzzin.
Yeah.
He's one of the most improved defensemen in the league, in my opinion. And it doesn't hurt, don't get me wrong, it doesn't hurt that you're playing with Kelly Rudy, has called the best defenseman in the NHL, Drew Doughty.
Yeah.
And I agree with him. It doesn't hurt to be playing with Drew Doughty, but you still got to give Jake Muzzin credit. He's become a solid, reliable defenseman, and he popped in 6 goals.
Yeah.
He tied a Kings franchise record for goals in a playoff. So, I mean, he's not young. He's still in his early 20s. So the future is very bright for both of these teams, and it's just unfortunate for the rest of the teams in the Western Conference. That's just more reason. They got to get better. I mean, these teams, the Ducks, the Sharks, the Jets, I mean, the Wild.
Every other team in the West.
It's clear, Richie, that those two teams are a step above not only the Western Conference teams, but all teams in the entire league.
And the Kings, I think, with their depth, too, are able to. And make no mistake, guys, you know, I've said this on the show before. You watch the first 3 games of San Jose LA, and you wonder what the heck happened. One of the keys was, we mentioned Pearson and Toffoli, and I think absolutely that was one of the keys, moving them with Jeff Carter and moving out Jordan Nolan and getting speed and not changing with the times, so to speak, because I think Daryl Sutter knew it all along, but I think he kind of unleashed those guys, and boy, did it turn out well. And Toffoli and Pearson, I thought, great interviews last night. I thought Toffoli's interview with Scott Oak when he was on the phone with his dad was so just, I mean, that's
human.
That's human. It's so authentic,
yeah.
Right? And you hear so much cliche and all that stuff, and I thought, you know, wow, just great to be able to hear that and just to be able to kind of take it in, right? Not move away from it.
Yeah.
Not move away the camera or the mic, just kind of let it be. And I thought Pearson did a really classy interview. I think his was with Elliot Friedman, but he just so felt so fortunate. Guy who was passed over the draft. I mean, think about Jake Muzzin too, signed as a free agent.
Yep.
And there's a lot of guys on that team who worked very hard to get where they were. Not that there wasn't on the Rangers as well. I mean, you have Marty St. Louis, different stories there. But the point is, it's not all Drew Doughty's, you know, second overall, Anze Kopitar top 10, Dustin Brown first round. It's other guys as well.
Yeah.
You know?
And that's the beautiful, that's the thing that you guys know, I like the fourth line guys, the depth guys, mm-hmm. the grinders more than sometimes I even like the superstars, probably because I wasn't a very good hockey player and I had to struggle for every single inch on the ice. But yeah, Tyler Toffoli, he's a second round pick. You mentioned Muzzin. The depth players are really come out in the playoffs, and you see that. And Justin Williams, again, guys, he's a guy that he's been traded a lot in his career, and he's found a role with the Kings, and he does it well. Justin Williams, you're not telling me that he can play first line minutes on some teams. I mean, this guy is a great player, and it was great to see. And it goes back to what we were talking about at the beginning of the segment here. If they're able to keep these players together for even 3 or 4 years, you're talking about not only can the Kings or Hawks win a third cup, there's a chance that one of these teams could even win a fourth cup because of the core players that are in the primes of their careers. And you could say that maybe, you know, that the core age has gone up a little bit. But when you're talking about Keith and Seabrook and Doughty and the great defensemen, those players, has Drew Doughty even hit his peak yet? I don't even think he has hit his peak. I think his best Norris years are to come.
He looks like a bargain at $7 million a year, which is hard to believe in this NHL salary cap era. But I mean, you know, there's other defensemen in the NHL who are not as good as him who are getting paid more than $7 million a year.
You think about what Justin Williams from Philly. I mean, Philly had half the players in this final.
Yeah.
From, you know, Justin Williams for Danny Markov, and then Justin Williams from Carolina to L.A. for Patrick O'Sullivan in a second-round pick. Wow.
Steals.
Yeah.
I mean, the guy just wins you Stanley Cups. He's a
great on the boards. Yeah. He's great in the room. He's great at goes to the net. He's a smart player. He's a good character player.
He's a professional hockey player.
He's one of those late Philly first-rounders, and they've always nailed them. And that's another one they've nailed. So, yeah, the playoffs were great this year, guys. You know, people, they criticize the NHL and there's certain things, but you couldn't beat this year's playoffs, I don't think. First round was dynamite. Second round came maybe a little bit less than was desired, but the third round, I mean, that was like 2 finals in 1 there.
Yeah.
The third round, what you got there, and then the fourth round was great as well. And we haven't even talked about the Rangers.
Yeah.
But I don't know, like, I mean, they got a good young core there. With McDonough on the back end, Stahl to get signed, and obviously with Lundqvist. But Richard's likely going to be bought out. Rick Nash, guys, was he wasn't engaging in contact at all.
No.
I mean, that was tough to watch. What they're going to do is going to be very interesting in a still wide-open Eastern Conference.
Let's head to break. When we come back, we'll talk about Brad Richards. We'll talk about the Rangers. We'll talk about Mike Richards. Much more to come on these two teams. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Drew Mandel alongside Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and NHL news is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We are pleased to welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show from McKean's Hockey and the Scout.ca. He covers the Ontario Hockey League, Brendan Ross. Brendan, good morning and thanks very much for joining us.
My pleasure, guys. Thanks for having me on.
We've brought Brendan on to continue with our NHL draft prospect preview. Of course, the draft is taking place 13 days from today in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. We will be there for the first and second rounds, and of course, the entire draft as a whole. You can hear it live here on TSN 1290. Brendan, we want to start with Kingston Frontenac's forward Sam Bennett, ranked first overall by NHL Central Scouting Service heading into this draft. To your mind, what's his ceiling as an NHL player, and is there one player, either past or current, an NHL forward that you would compare his game to?
Yeah, Sam Bennett's an interesting OHL prospect for this draft. He's at the top of CSS's rankings. He's just ranked number two on my list behind Ekblad, but as a comparable, I mean, he gets compared to Dougie Gilmore from formerly Toronto Maple Leaf because he wears 93. And, you know, he's playing under Gilmore's team in Kingston there, but it's a very fair comparison. The kid is just a tenacious worker. His work ethic is off the charts. And it's definitely not a bad thing that he also has quite a bit of skill. So when you get a player that works both ends of the ice, gives it 110% every shift, you're gonna have a player there that's gonna change your top six pretty quickly once he's ready.
Brendan, you mentioned Barrie Colts defenseman Aaron Ekblad. He's ranked number two overall, and you said that you had him actually ahead of Sam Bennett. If you're Florida and you've got the first overall pick, what's your argument for drafting Ekblad first overall? And in your opinion, can he be a franchise defenseman?
Well, first thing, I mean, the kid, he's been a standout at every level, playing up an age group since he's in Bantam, I believe. He's from my neck of the woods down in Essex territory, and you know, once he got granted exceptional status there, he's just exceeded expectations, and those are lofty expectations. So kudos to him for doing that, meeting that. However, I mean, at the OHL level, he is a man amongst boys. I've seen him behind the scenes. You know, I show up early to the games in Barrie. I'm walking the corridor, and the boy is actually a man. I mean, he's intimidating for me to look at. Just a massive player. However, I don't think he. I mean, he's going to play a ton of minutes for whoever drafts him, whether that be Florida or not. But I'm not sure he's that top pairing defenseman. He could be that guy, but I don't think he has quite the you know, the puck skills, the poise with the puck, to operate that power play all by himself, like you see with, you know, the Eric Carlsons or the Pietrangelos. But he's there and he's close. So whoever's going to draft him, whether that be Florida, which I mean, they're going to consider trading the pick because there's probably lots of interest out of franchise or potential franchise defensemen like that. But Florida, they could also use him. So, I mean, if they keep the pick, they don't get offers that they don't like, he's going to walk into that franchise and he's going to play an important role relatively quickly. So unless they get blown away with an offer, which could be a possibility, drafting Ekblad number one wouldn't be too bad of a plan B for the Florida Panthers.
Brendan, Michael Dal Cole, Oshawa Generals, he had 39 goals this year. Do you think he's going to go top five, and what do you think he brings? You know, what are his greatest attributes?
Dal Cole's been one of the guys I've been following very closely this year, outside of the Sarnia two players, Gold Olden and D'Angelo. he's probably the guy I've had the most views of in the last 2 years. So dating back to his minor midget days, he's just made such a fantastic progression since those days. He was always considered a top player, but the steps he's taken to become, you know, the elite OHL major junior player, it's just quite remarkable. And the thing is with Dal Colle is that he's already made some, you know, great gains in his early development here. Last year he put up a great rookie season in Oshawa. This year he almost doubled his point production playing with Scott Laughton. And I still feel like he has such room to grow even further. He's a tall, lanky, intelligent player, and I feel that if he can build on that frame, that lanky frame, add a little bit more grit to his game, he's going to take it to the next level. So, absolutely, he's a top five pick in my book, and he's just going to be that guy that you throw out there on the first power play unit. He really controls the pace well. He sees the ice well. His playmaking skills are vastly underrated in the scouting world, I feel. He's a fantastic finisher. So there's not a whole lot of weaknesses to his game, and the upside is very large for Michael Dal Colle.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290, online at tsn1290.ca. We're speaking with Brendan Ross from McKean's Hockey and the Scout.ca. He covers the Ontario Hockey League. He's joining us to discuss the draft-eligible prospects from the OHL, the NHL entry draft upcoming 13 days' time from now is round one Friday, June the 27th in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Brendan, Peterborough Pete's left winger Nick Ritchie is ranked 7th among North American skaters heading into the draft, and oftentimes when you're drafting these 18-year-old kids, a lot of them have the height, you know, 6'2", but they might also weigh about 112 pounds. That's not the issue with Nick Ritchie. He's, you know, up there around 225, 230 pounds. Do you have any issues or any concerns about his conditioning, and do you think that's going to affect his draft stock at all?
No, I don't really have any issues with his conditioning. I mean, he is a little bit heavy, but I haven't really seen the way he's built. So, I mean, I know his brother's a big kid. He played in Sarnia when he started his OHL career. Whoever drafts him is going to put him on a program, so that can all be addressed relatively quickly. What you can't address or you can't change too much is the fact that he's a massive kid out there. There's nights on the ice where he's just playing out dominant kids, just shrugging off kids left and right. So that's an attribute you just can't teach or can't change in a prospect. So there's going to be scouts I've talked to. You know, there's some that are worried about his inconsistency from game to game. Myself, you know, that's a little bit concerning. But when you're playing on such a poor team, and you're a teenager, you've been in the league 3 years, that can wear on you a bit. So I feel once he gets on takes that next step in his development up to the next level, playing a little higher hockey with maybe some more talented players, I feel like that's when you're really going to see Nick Ritchie shine. So he's ranked seventh, like you said. Personally, I have him right there with Michael Dal Colle and not too far behind Sam Bennett. So there's scouts that absolutely love this kid's potential. So he's one storyline that I'm really eager to see where he ends up, come 2 weeks from now.
Brendan, next guy, another left winger we want to ask you about, a player that some Jets fans are hoping maybe falls to number 9, Niagara Ice Dogs left winger Brendan Perlini. He's ranked 8th overall amongst North American skaters by Central Scouting. What skill set does Perlini offer, and what do you think his ceiling might be as an NHL player? I know it's hard to say at this point, he's only 18, but what do you think his ceiling might be as an NHLer?
Perlini's an interesting case. As we all know, he came flying out of the gates to start his draft season this year in Niagara. Really, really took charge of the offense with Leafs prospect Carter Verhaeghe. His upside's big, and this is the type of draft where, you know, they say it's not the greatest draft class, you know, in recent history, and, you know, I tend to agree that way. But you're looking for players like Perlini where they're showing these great, great skill levels already, but there's so much more room to grow into. So Perlini falls into that type of player. So you know, you, if you get a chance to draft somebody with that kind of upside, you hop all over that. And a team inside the top 10, top 12, they're not going to be disappointed walking away with Perlini. He's, you know, his skating is his top end of this draft class. He shoots the puck to score. One of the best shooters in the draft, to be honest with you. A possession player, which is, you know, highly regarded in today's NHL. So the only thing he's really lacking is, you know, he can at times kind of disappear from the action a bit. You know, he's a little bit soft for a big man. So if he can just add that a little bit of grit, you know, kind of like Michael Del Cole, a little bit of physicality to his game, you're going to see a whole different player, and you're going to really, you know, you're going to hit the jackpot with this kid if he falls too far into the draft.
Brendan, Sault Ste. Marie center Jared McCann is supposed to be a real good skater. He had 62 points in 64 games last year. Can you tell us a bit more about his game?
McCann's an interesting guy. I've been following him since his minor midget days in London. There, he's always been near the best of his age group. This year, you know, he's taken on a lot of responsibility in Sault Ste. Marie, and it kind of shows from game to game. Some days he shows up and he's the best player on the ice. Other days he looks a little bit tired, putting a little too much, you know, maybe pressure on himself to perform. But, you know, this kid can skate, and, you know, he's a fantastic shooter. The way the puck comes off his stick, it's in the back of the net before you know it. You can't teach that skill. Like Perlini, he would be right up there with Perlini as one of the best shooters from the OHL draft class anyways. He's intelligent. He shows flashes of, you know, commitment in the defensive zone, but his consistency tends to wave from game to game. So there can be a little bit of improvement in his consistency, but you definitely see it there. He's got that intelligence. He knows where to be in the defensive zone. And then for that matter, in all three zones. So you're getting a guy that can probably play top 6 minutes, you know, once he hits his full stride. If not, you're getting an excellent third line centerman. So I know Kyle Dubas and Sault Ste. Marie, they love this kid. They have big expectations for this kid. And he's performed at every level through his hockey career. So there's no reason to think that he won't take that next step and improve that consistency.
Brendan Ross of McKean's Hockey and the Scout.ca joins us here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, talking about Ontario Hockey League draft eligible prospects. Brendan, the next player we want to ask you about is a guy who's there's sort of a pretty large discrepancy. That's Josh Hosang of the Windsor Spitfires. You know, he's up as high as 18th overall when you look at the International Scouting Services draft rankings, and then you look at Craig Button of TSN, his Craigslist, and he has Josh Hosang down at number 39. Where do you fall on Josh Hosang? Is he closer to the, you know, the top 20, or is he closer to the sort of early second round draft pick?
That's a great question. I'm glad you brought up Josh Hosang. Another player I've seen a lot playing in Windsor, and you know, you sit next to the scouts, you talk to them, and depending on the night, you know, that Hosang's playing, you could be, you know, looking to each other and saying, wow, look what that kid just did, because his puck skills, his speed, I mean, they are top end of this class. There's reason to get excited about his offensive abilities. On the other night, you're looking to each other and being like, whoa, why did he make that decision? Why did he try forcing that pass? So, I mean, his hockey sense is a concern. He makes some bad decisions out there. He forces some plays that, you know, coaches will not put up with at the next level. So that is why you would see some teams or some rankings have him so low. And for other reasons that he's so high, you see that skill. It's evident. He's dazzling, you know, the fan base in Windsor on a nightly basis. And then rushes. He doesn't even get touched because the kid's so fast and so slippery. But there's some concerns with his decision-making and hockey sense. So for myself, I think, I'm trying to think where I had him ranked. I think I have him, you know, just 31st, so around 31, just outside. But there's definitely potential for him to go top 20, just based on that offensive skill set. Yeah, like I said, you either love this kid or he can drive you insane with some of the bad decisions he makes, but you can't teach that offensive skill.
Brandon, we have a couple more players we want to ask you about. Robbie Fabry, Guelph Storm Center. He's ranked 21st overall, but as you know, he was the OHL playoff MVP this past spring, posting 28 points in 16 games. For that reason, a lot of people are saying that he should actually be more of a mid-round, first-round pick. Also, a lot of people comparing him to Jeff Skinner 4 years back with the Kitchener Rangers. Do you agree with that comparison? Do you see that, or do you think he's being compared to a player that's maybe a little bit above where he is?
I think the Jeff Skinner comparison comes from the fact that, you know, Skinner had a tremendous playoff run, just like Fabry did in his draft year. He's smaller. He's a good skater. He's a good puck handler. But I don't see the comparable as a playing style to Jeff Skinner at all. He's a really, really intelligent player. He's very small, though, and that's where you're going to get your discrepancies from the scouting world. Myself, I've been high on this kid since last year. You know, you've seen those flashes of skill playing in Guelph. I mean, and he was their best player easily in the playoffs this year, well deserving of that MVP award. But there is concern. That size concern. He got pushed around a bit at the Memorial Cup. If anyone was tuning into that action, he gets run over times, but. The thing I like about him, he gets right back up, and you know he's a pit bull out there. He's not afraid to go right back at that same player that, you know, knocked him across the ice the shift before. His puck skills, his creativity, they're unmatched almost in the OHL, maybe ahead of Goldobin and Sarnia. He sees things that other kids just wouldn't see, and he tries things that other kids wouldn't try. And the thing with him is he gets away with it. He's successful more times than, well, many more times than not. So I see him at the, you know, there's lots of options. There's a big group from, you know, around four or five all the way up to, you know, 25, that any of those kids could fall in any type of order. And, you know, I would not be surprised. But because of his size, I can't see him sliding unless the team just, you know, fell absolutely in love with, which was, you know, that playoff run was pretty magical. So, I mean, that's potentially an option there. So,
final question for you, Brendan. Brendan Lemieux, the son of Claude Lemieux. We're not sure if he has disregard for other players' safety and only scores in the playoffs, but do you think he's going to be a first-round pick in the draft in 2 weeks?
Love this kid. Love Brendan Lemieux. You know, he plays in Barrie. It's a little bit of a trek for me to drive up there, but every time I watch this kid, he makes stuff happen. He's an impact player. You look at the NHL playoffs, every contending team has one. Chicago's Andrew Shaw, you know, Boston's Brad Marchand. He's going to be that player for whatever team drafts him. And I can't see any reason he would not fall within the top 30 picks of this draft. So, yeah, Brendan Lemieux, he should be a first rounder because you can see him already playing at the next level. You know what role he's going to play. You know he's versatile. So those are big commodities in the draft.
Brendan Ross covers the Ontario Hockey League for McKean's Hockey and the Scout.ca. Brendan, thanks very much for doing this morning.
My pleasure, guys. Thanks for having me on.
Take care. Let's head to break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, the podcast on TSN 1290.ca.
Now Clifford took a hit. Can he clear it? Yes, he got it ahead. 2-on-1. Mike Richards with Lewis in the zone. Mike Richards to the net. A pass block. Richards again. Scores! Mike Richards tried to make the play to Trevor Lewis. The pass was blocked. Richards picked it up and beat Lundqvist on the short side. Mike Richards with 2:46 left in the second period here in Game 3 has given the Kings a 3-0 lead.
Mike Richards scoring in the Stanley Cup finals earlier this week. That was game three between the Kings and the Rangers. A lot of talk this week about Mike Richards and the potential for him to be a buyout candidate, a compliance buyout candidate.
Did we bring that up a month ago?
Yes, you did bring it up a month ago there, Mr. Pollock. So
I think it was more than a month ago. I think Richie was the first round, actually.
Well, it was when he was playing about as badly as we've seen him play for a while, when he was really struggling in that first
round.
Didn't
have a good regular season either, Drew.
Before the playoffs.
You're right. I mean, he didn't have a good regular season.
And I'm a huge, by the way, I want to qualify that. It's a good Kenora boy. I'm a huge Mike Richards fan, and I picked him on the Olympic team before the season and during the season. So I just want to qualify that. I'm not knocking on Mike Richards at all, because I think he really stepped up his game as the playoffs progressed. So I just want to say that.
Okay. Thank you for clarifying that for us. You know, has his performance in the Cup final, the last, say, two rounds of the playoffs, taken him off the board as a compliance buyout candidate? Or do you think the Kings are going to have to sit back and really consider it, given how much, you know, how many more years are on his contract, which is another six more years, and a cap hit at $5.75 million?
I mean, they have to consider it, Drew. I don't think there's any question that they have to consider it, and they're going to consider it, and I'd be shocked if Dean Lombardi hasn't already been thinking, you know, what does the GM do all day when he's in the playoffs? They prepare for the draft. They prepare for free agency. So you look at Mike Richards. You mentioned the 5.75 for the next six seasons. I mean, that's a lot. That's higher than Jeff Carter is getting paid. Obviously, after this upcoming season, Justin Williams is going to want money, Jared Stoll, and they're going to have to pay Pearson, Toffoli. So when you projected that, and they want to bring Gaborik back, you think, so that's kind of been tied together, right? It's been Richards maybe buyout. You can do compliance buyout, meaning that if you buy out Richards now, you still pay him.
There's no cap hit.
Over the course of time, but there's no cap hit for you, and that enables you to bring back Gaborik or whatever it may be. Now, Mike Richards, his salary is 5.75 as a cap hit, but he's actually getting paid $7 million next year, $6 million the year after, 5.5 after that, 4.5 after that, and then two seasons of $3 million. So money-wise, it's not... You know, it's not spread out like 5.75 million. You get a break on the back.
And that's important.
It is important. And Eric DeHatchick wrote about, you know, maybe that makes him more appealing to a team that has to takes a cap hit on, but doesn't actually pay him as much money.
They have to get to the salary cap floor without actually taking the full.
I think at the end of the day, Drew, when you look at what Mike Richards means to the team, chemistry wise. And you look at Jared Stoll, who's great. Maybe Mike Richards becomes the third-line center on the team after next season, and maybe they play him on the wing slash center next year, move him around. His relationship with Jeff Carter, his leadership, if you watch last night, who were the two guys who were hitting everybody's hand on the way out to the game, to game five of the Stanley Cup Finals, Carter and Richards, leaders. It's a locker room thing, too. And we spoke earlier in the show about the chemistry in the locker room. Well, we'll move Brad Richards to later, but the chemistry in the locker room, and I think if you buy him out, it may very well change that chemistry, and you don't want to mix with a good thing. Like, I bet you Daryl Sutter, who's, you know, rumored to maybe not be coming back, they weren't sure, you know, said to Scott Oak yesterday, he's planning training camp ready. I think he would be very much opposed to losing a guy like that and in the locker room. And it might cost you somebody else, but the cap also is going to be going up this year. And then with the Canadian TV deal, it's going to go up next year. I think he does stay.
I think Jets fans are going to be a little bit disappointed. I agree 100% with Richie. I don't think they're going to buy him out. And sure, he was playing fourth line center, but obviously when he was acquired by the LA Kings and Dean Lombardi, they didn't acquire him thinking that he was going to be in their bottom six. They expected him to be in the top six. But Richie's right. Right now, at 29 years old, as his career's lost a few steps, he most likely is going to be that third line center. But as I mentioned,
he can get those back too.
Right. In the first segment, Richards plays penalty kill and he plays on the power play. So Richards is a big part of this team, even though he may only have had 3 goals and 10 points. He's a big part of this team, and I think, you know, the fact that he redeemed himself, played better in these playoffs, they won the cup. I don't know if he was going to be a buyout anyways, but I think this ensured that he won't be a buyout. So I know that everyone's talking about that. You know, we didn't even get to Brad Richards, Drew.
I think Brad
Richards, there's a much better chance that he'll be a buyout.
We'll get to Brad Richards a little bit later on in the show. Let's head to break. Mike Richards played 23 minutes last night. When we come back, the governor, the general manager, and the head coach of the Brandon Wheat Kings, Kelly McCrimmon, joins us to talk about WHL draft eligible prospects. 1 hour down, 2 hours to go. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.
10 in the morning. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on TSN 1290. This segment is brought to you by Bernstein's Deli, the official deli of Illegal Curve Hockey. Conveniently located at Cordon and Lanark in the Cordon Village Mall, Bernstein's is a family-owned and operated traditional-style deli. Take it home or eat in their full-service restaurant. Bernstein's Deli has been Winnipeg's deli destination for nearly 30 years. For more information, find them on Facebook or at bernsteinsdeli.com. I'm your host, Drew Mandel, joined in studio by my colleagues, Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg. Hoping to hear from Kelly McCrimmon, Governor, General Manager, and Head Coach of the Brandon Wheat Kings momentarily, to talk about the WHL draft-eligible prospects. The NHL draft comes to you 13 days from today. Philadelphia, Pennsylvania on Friday night for first round, and then rounds 2 through 7. On the Saturday, all of which you can hear on TSN 1290. We'll be down there. Dave Manuk of IllegalCurve.com will be there. Huss, Gary, Hustler, and Lawless, they'll be there as well. So we have you covered fully and completely with everything NHL draft related.
You may not be as interested in obviously round one as you in round 2 through 7 as you are in round one, but I will say this, there's going to be a lot of movement to this draft, I suspect. And trades, maybe pending free agents, big-time players, players we'll talk about later in the show. I expect it'll be an action-packed weekend in Philadelphia, so absolutely, Drew, tune right in.
Yeah.
That's a good point, Richie. I think, you know, we mentioned that a little bit last week when we kicked off the 2014 NHL draft preview coverage, and I think you're going to see a lot of picks moved. For example, you know, you've got Anaheim, who's got the 10th overall pick from Ottawa, acquired in the Bobby Ryan trade. Are they going to move that, a team that has so many good young prospects on forward and on defense? Saw Sammy Vatanen, Hampus Lindholm. Are they going to move that to possibly lure a Jason Spezza? We're going to talk about that a little bit later. I think you're going to see more probably first-round picks moved than you've seen in previous years. It's not a strong draft, but it's still a strong enough. It's still a draft in the sense that you obviously it's a draft. Let me clean that up a little bit.
I hope so.
I think you're going to see players moved for draft picks. Maybe not as you might not see a Corey Schneider type
I think
of
you
player.
Will. I mean, Anaheim doesn't need a pick right now. I mean, sure, every team needs a pick, but what Anaheim wants is they want to get better now. They need to solidify second-line center. They need to get depth behind Ryan Getzlaff, and they need to take a step. And I think having that pick now is one of the, you know, is a luxury.
Yeah, and, you know, we talked about Florida, who there's a good chance they do take Aaron Ekblad.
I don't think he fits into what I don't think that makes sense.
Well, they've also got a lot of good young defensemen and forwards there, so they might move that thinking that they can add someone to help them now.
If they don't think he's going to be a top end guy, which our last or top end meaning top, you know, number one pick,
right?
Number one kind of guy. I mean, isn't Eric Gudbrandsson a kind of a stay at home right side defenseman who's big and strong?
Yeah.
Now let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We are pleased to welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show the Governor, General Manager, and Head Coach of the Brandon Wheat Kings, Kelly McCrimmon. Kelly, good morning, and thanks very much for joining us.
My pleasure, guys. Thanks for having me.
Hey, Kelly, brought you on to talk about the WHL draft-eligible prospects for the upcoming NHL draft 13 days from today in Philadelphia. Wanted to start with two players that you're intimately familiar with. That is Brandon Wheat Kings players John Quenneville and Jace Horoluk, both of whom are centers. You know, for our audience that may not be completely familiar with what these two players bring to the table, can you sort of describe their best attributes as players?
Well, they're both good players. Jace actually is a right winger. He played with John for all of this past year, quite a bit of the year previous. They've had a lot of responsibility for young guys in our organization, and this past year Jace was our top scorer. John would have been in the top three or four on our team. They have been power play guys all year, so as a result, I think they really had an opportunity to develop. John's a big centerman that's got real good offensive ability. I think he's a player that his stock has risen quite a bit over the course of the year. He had a real good second half to the year, and I think as a result has drawn a lot of attention. And Jace is a different player. He's not as big as John, but great passion, great energy, and a ton of skill. He can really score.
Kelly, the Western Conference, pardon me, the Western Hockey League playoffs have been over for a little while, and we've got less than 2 weeks to go before the draft. Have you been talking to Jace Harluck and John Quenneville a little bit, because you've been through this process so many times, and what types of things are you telling them in the days leading up to the draft when they're waiting for their name to be called?
Well, I spoke with both players before they went to the NHL Combine, which was at the end of May, and then talked to them at the end of that process. And, you know, now it's just a matter of waiting. There's, you know, the work is done. It's, you know, a matter of seeing how the day plays out. I think that both players have, you know, held up their end of their bargain in terms of, you know, having good years, playing hard, doing well at the combine, and now they wait and see where they're going to be selected. So outside of, you know, probably some nerves as the day gets closer, it's a matter of letting it play out.
You know, when you look at Sam Reinhart, he's consensus number one pick for most people. When you look online and listen to the experts, Kelly, what is his best attribute? Is it his hockey sense and the way he sees the game? Is that what makes him so good?
Well, Sam is a great player. He's a very intelligent player. A lot of maturity to his game. Never has a bad game. He has games that are better than others, but his B game is still a game where he's making a lot of contributions. He's dangerous every time that he has the puck. He's a great power play player. He's good on faceoffs. He's going to be a great player, I think, for sure. And again, is benefited by the fact this is his third year in the league. So I had a lot of experience.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290, online tsn1290.ca. Our guest is Kelly McCrimmon, Governor, General Manager, and Head Coach of the Brandon Wheat Kings, talking about WHL draft-eligible talent for this upcoming NHL draft. Another player that obviously you're familiar with from Prince Albert of the WHL, Leon Draisaitl. He's, you know, big centerman, you know, 6'2", 208, 105 points in the regular season in the WHL. You know, how would you compare him? Is there a player that comes to mind, either current or former in the NHL, that he reminds you of?
Well, first of all, I don't think that he's necessarily behind Sam Reinhart. I think he's right there with him. He's a tremendous player. He's a little bit like an Anze Kopitar type player. He makes tremendous plays on his backhand. He protects the puck extremely well, and I think he's going to be a great player. He was dominant in our league this year, and I think he's really going to develop into a great NHL player.
Kelly, we're going to skip ahead a little bit down the list here, not necessarily in the exact order that they're ranked here, but Braden Point is ranked 17th overall, and on Craig Button's list, he plays for the Moose Jaw Warriors, who, of course, the Brandon Wheat Kings played in the first round. What are his greatest attributes, and do you think he should be a mid-first round pick?
Well, a smaller guy that's had a tremendous career in our league. He joined Moose Jaw as a 15-year-old at the end of the season, played playoff games with them that year. He's, he's just a classy player. He's smart. He's got great character. He's very dangerous offensively. And he really, I don't have the numbers in front of me, but his last, 40 to 50 games, he was probably the top scorer in our league. He had a great second half of the season where he piled up a lot of points, joined Team Canada's under-18 team in the spring, was an important player on that team, and, again, just a guy that's really established himself in his 2 years in the league.
Kelly, Aaron Ekblad is the consensus number one defenseman. We were talking about that right before you hopped on. Hayden Fleury, a Red Deer, read some, I haven't seen him play, but read some comparables to a guy like Jay Bouwmeester. What kind of player is he? Is that a fair comparison, and how do you see him faring in the big leagues?
Well, he's got great size, great skating ability, so that's why he is attractive to NHL scouts. He's probably top ranked defenseman from the West, and again was on a team where he had a lot of responsibility, and I think as a result was watched a lot by NHL teams, and he's got a lot of potential.
sticking with the back end, Kelly, Julius Honka out of Swift Current, defenseman there, you know, had 56 points in 62 games this year. You know, is he more offensively inclined than the stay-at-home defenseman? Do you see him in sort of that mid-first-round range for the upcoming draft?
Well, he's a pretty effective player. He's got a lot of life to his game. He plays hard. He's physical. He's really good offensively. He's got lots of jam. And, you know, the only concern would be not a real big guy. He'll probably, I don't know what his central scouting height and weight would be, but I'm guessing around 6'1", 180. But very dynamic player. Had a great year in Swift Current, which, you know, even for a first-year European player coming over, sometimes that adjustment takes a little while, but he was exceptional this season.
Kelly, next player we want to ask you about is another player that you saw face the Brandon Wee Kings in the second round. That's Brett Pollock of the Edmonton Oil Kings, and I want to ask you about him not just because we think he might be a distant relative of Illegal Curve's Richard Pollock, but because he's had such a great season. He's really shot up the draft rankings. What do you think his ceiling is as an NHLer, and where do you think he might go in this year's draft?
Well, he's a big guy with a lot of potential. He's good around the net, and you know, that's, I think, what you know, it attracts NHL scouts to his game. And I think as well, he's probably still a little bit raw because of his size. He hasn't really filled out a lot yet, and I think you know, when you're projecting, as NHL scouting staffs need to do, he's probably a guy they see having a lot of upside still to his game.
Now, Kelly, you've been doing this for a long time, and I'm interested in the players coming through. Have you noticed like a trend or a change in the players and maybe their skill set or what they focus more on than they did 5 years ago? Has there been any change in that respect, or the players coming through for the most part are very similar year to year?
Well, I think it you know, it changes a bit over time. I think since the 2004-2005 lockout and the changes that were made to the rules at that time, I think there was a shift then with, you know, the attributes that scouts would look for, certainly even more of a premium on skating. I think since that time, you know, and I guess that's 9 years now, there's likely more room for the smaller player to be successful. And yet, you know, all you need to do is watch LA win the Stanley Cup with the makeup of their team. Mm-hmm. And you can see the premium that some teams put on size and strength and the ability to play a heavy game where they can protect the puck as well as a team like LA did. And, you know, really, you look at a lot of teams in that Western Conference of the NHL, they've got that makeup. So, you know, those are all considerations, and I guess that's what makes it interesting, and that's, you know, different approaches that NHL teams might take in evaluating and selecting players.
Kelly, we've got one final question for you, and we appreciate you coming on this morning. The WHL recently announced, this isn't draft-related, but it's WHL-related, they recently announced that they're going to be imposing a division-based playoff format, which is different than the previous playoff format. Were you in favor of that, and why do you think that'll be good for the WHL?
Well, I was in favor of it. Our playoff format, we have two conferences like the NHL. We have two divisions in each conference, and for I think 9 or 10 years we had the identical playoff format that the NHL had previously, where the top 8 teams advance to the playoffs, the division winners are the top seeds, and you play your playoffs out till you have conference champions, then of course league champions. What we have done now is we've adopted the identical format that the NHL used this past year, and I think you know, what I like about it, I think having, you know, just watched the NHL playoffs, I thought it generated a lot of excitement with the division rivalries. I think that's important. And for us, it, you know, will guarantee that at least half of your playoff series are going to be divisional teams. So that's a good thing. And then I think the fans' ability to follow the brackets, which, you know, we're Canadian markets. But if you look at March Madness in the U.S. side with the basketball, that's half the fun for fans is trying to fill out their brackets and follow along. And I know that the NHL generated a lot of interest for the same reason. So again, following the NHL's lead, I think it's going to be a format that works really well for our league.
Kelly McCrimmon is the governor, general manager, and head coach of the Brandon Wheat Kings. He joins us on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show to talk about the Western Hockey League's draft-eligible prospects. Kelly, thanks very much for doing this morning.
Yeah, my pleasure. Anytime, guys.
Take care, Kelly. Let's head to break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Gives it to Richards again. The ever dangerous Richards shot scores. Richards saw some space in there, and it's a goal. Power play, New York. You're ahead, 2-1.
Brad Richards of the New York Rangers scoring a goal. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. This is our UFA of the Week segment. Even though the guy's not officially an unrestricted free agent, he's still under contract to the New York Rangers for a number of more years and a lot more money. The expectation that we have is that he will be bought out. Richard, do you think that, first of all, before we go any further, I'm not speaking out of turn when I say that you expect that Brad Richards, who is under contract until 2019-20 at a cap hit of $6.66 million, so that's another 6 years, you're expecting that the Rangers will buy him out sometime before the end of the month?
Yeah, I think it's a guarantee. I think he's getting bought out. No question about it. It's done. I mean, Glenn Saylor's pretty honest. I mean, he acknowledged the fact that they've been considering it in this pre-Stanley Cup presser. And I don't anticipate them not buying him out at this point. They're going to have to pay Mark Stahl. They're going to have to pay Brassard, Kreider, Zuccarello this year.
Yep.
They want to bring Boyle back. Moore, Pouliot. I mean, all these guys are RFAs or UFAs this year. I'm assuming they're going to want to sign St. Louis after this following year. Stepan needs to be signed. Hagelin. I mean, they don't have really anybody under contract except for McDonough, Girardi, Nash, and Richards. And the Nash contract doesn't look great right now. Richards, they want to get off the books. And money is not a big deal to them. They make money when they don't make the playoffs, I assume. I'm pretty confidently, I think I can assume that. So the fact that they made a run to the Stanley Cup final,
hand over fist,
the money that they're paying out for this is nothing for them.
Brad Richards is a great player, a great guy in the dressing room, former Conn Smythe winner. He makes too much money.
And, you know, Ezzy, the thing about him is,
Unlike me, I don't make enough.
Yeah, well, Brad Richards is not a great skater. Never has been. Now, he's older than Mike Richards, one thing. Mike Richards isn't the best skater either. But the big difference between these two is that, and as he alluded to it earlier in the show, Mike Richards can do different things. Mike Richards can kill penalties. He can be a checking player who can contribute offensively if he needs to. Brad Richards can't do that. So if he's not scoring, he's not doing anything.
I thought, Richie, that it was really puzzling. I think we'd all agree. Alain Vigneault, great coach, was a great coach with the Moose, great coach with the Canucks, had his issues with the Canucks in managing that team, but kept going to Brad Richards on the point on the power play.
He didn't. Well, his power play structure made no sense. PJ Stock talked about it last night in the second.
The power play of the Rangers, guys, I don't know what they were officially, what the official percentage was, but it was awful in the playoffs. It was awful in the regular season.
He didn't make. Vigneault, to his credit, is a very good hands off coach, but I don't think he made enough adjustments in the final at all.
He had four forwards on the point, and Brian McDonough is easily the guy, the bomb on the point. They struggled with that time and time again, but to that point with Brad Richards and how he's not as versatile and he's not effective as many situations. Brad Richards, when he was in his prime with the Tampa Bay Lightning, why the Rangers acquired him, he was one of the best playmakers, and he had that element, kind of that gritty element. Not the most physical player, but he could get in there, and he's kind of become more of a finesse player. He's always been
a finesse player, but he's a perimeter player.
He's lost a step, and as you mentioned, this goes to what you're saying, Richie, he's not as effective as an offensive player, and you know, he had 12 points in 25 playoff games.
He got a lot of ice time, though.
Brad Richards, when they signed him, when Glenn Sather signed him, and it's funny because LA tried to sign him too. You remember that? They were the second team that was in there in the Brad Richards sweepstakes. That's what, 4 or 5 years ago now. they envisioned him being an 80-point guy who could score 20 points in the playoffs and be a primary scorer. And then not only did John Tortorella have him on the bench last year, Alain Vigneault demoted him to the fourth line.
Yeah.
That's not the player that he needs to be, and not the player that he needs to be at that salary.
And it's
you
not
can't
a fourth
have a player playing that role at when he's making that type of dough.
It's not a fourth line with Kopitar, Carter, and Stoll in front of you.
Yeah.
It's a fourth line with...
There's an opportunity.
Brian, you know, like, yeah. Wait, Brian Boyle and Dominic Moore, like guys are playing, they were playing obviously both centers, but one was playing wing.
Yep.
The point is, like, you're not looking at depth in from the middle. Stepan wasn't exactly impressive. I mean, you're talking about Derek Brassard. I mean, these are the guys ahead of you. Not the three guys I just mentioned who are, you know, top NHL center or top five NHL center in Kopitar, top 15 NHL center probably in Jeff Carter, and one of the best third line checking centers in Jared Stoll.
If Brad Richards had much left in the tank, he would have played a more prominent role for the Rangers.
Also, it's the system that he plays in, Drew. That needs to be taken into account. The Rangers play a very fast skating, puck moving kind of flow system. He can't play that. It's not his strength.
If we're in agreement then that come July 1st he's going to be an unrestricted free agent.
Yeah, I don't think there's a doubt about it.
Yeah, we're agreed on that front. You know, is he a 1 year contract? I mean, is somebody going to offer him multiple years? I mean, where do you see Brad Richards ending up after he's bought out?
I think the currency in this market is term, because you're capped out. So to get somebody, you have to add an extra year. So I wouldn't be shocked if he got 2 years, but I would be shocked if he got three.
Yeah, and he won't want 1 year. At this point in his career, he won't sign a 1 year contract, and I think a team will give him 2 years. As Richie mentioned, 3 years might be a little bit too much, but he's still an NHL player. He's just not a player that on a good team he's in your top six at this point in his career. And Brad Richards has had a great career, and he's got a cup, and he's got the Conn Smythe. It's a new NHL, and he's lost a step, and through the amount of years he's played and a few injuries. So I think he will sign. It's tough to find a fit, though. He's got to be on a team that either needs him to be a veteran leader to kind of solidify a third line role, or he needs to be on a better team that needs a depth player. But I don't even know if he's a tough fit, because at this point in his career, he's almost a specialty player in that he can only really be a guy that plays 20 minutes a game and on the power play. He's not a guy that you can put out for the penalty
he's
kill, and he's not a guy.
He's a game guy who can play power play, and he's a good passer still. I mean, a couple of things I would think. You look at the New York Islanders, a team that has a lot of speed, so can compensate for his lack of speed and could use playmakers, and he can stay in the New York area. That's one of the reasons I look at that.
That's a good fit.
Possibly going back to Dallas, them needing depth up the middle. I mean, they don't want Cody Eakin to play second line center. If they can avoid it, he'd be better suited, I think, to a third line center role. He's played in Dallas before. Maybe something like that with a younger player who can compensate for him, you know, physically and speed wise. Also, you look at other teams. Does Anaheim fill their second-line center role? If they aren't able to get a Spezza or a Kessler, maybe he falls in there as a cheap 1 or 2 year guy. So, I mean, there are places, although they play a pretty fast pace too, there are places, and I know Dallas wants to push it, but there are places that he can go, but they also depends on who doesn't go somewhere. You know, it's a domino effect.
So he waits till after everything settles out, probably.
I think so, Drew. I think so. I don't see a team jumping right at him right away and say, he's the guy we need. But he can still
Whereas Richie, you know, we're going to get into this a little bit later, but you're talking Joe Thornton and Jason Spezza, guys who are a notch above Brad Richards. So I think that's what you're talking about. When you're talking about the big names that are out there as far as trade bait, and Joe Thornton is not so much, but when his brother comes out and he starts saying, you know, I don't know if the fans want Joe Thornton in San Jose.
That was a bizarre. We'll talk about that later in the show.
Joe Thornton and saying, you know, the rumor, who was it, Darren Dreger said he might end up in Chicago. It's like, can you go, you're going to go leech a cup off of them?
Probably.
Go win your own cup.
Well, he can't. He's proven that. Let's go to break. When we come back, we'll either talk about Jason Spezza, or we'll do unrestricted free agents Anton Strahlman and David Legwand. Lots of things to talk about. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
You've been listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast.
Catch the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live Saturdays on TSN 1290 and TSN 1290.ca.